Cameron, welcome back to the fight, man. How you doing today?
Good, Tom. Thanks for having me. Hey, Dan.
How you doing, Cameron?
Good. Thanks, guys.
So you're locked into the country of Canada right now, I hear, huh? You're stuck there?
Yeah, they put in place these regulations now where if you come from the U.S. where I live, I'm technically U.S. resident, but when I fly back to Canada where I'm originally from, I have to do a COVID test in the U.S., a COVID mm-hmm. test at Vancouver Airport, 3 days lockdown at a hotel, and then 11 more days in quarantine at home. So it's making it tough to come back and forth now.
When's the last time you were in Arizona?
I've been back since, in the last 12 months, I've gone down 8 times. So I've come back and I've done 8 14-day quarantines.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Where's the quarantine at your house?
It's at your home.
But
you're not allowed to leave your property. You can't go get groceries. I've had the police show up at the door to make sure that I'm here. I had the government show up at my door, and then they wanted me to wear a mask and bring ID to the door. I'm like, no, I'm at my home. If you're worried about me, you can step back, but I'm not wearing a mask in my own house. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God, man. We went to Cabo in January, and to get back in, you had to have the little COVID test and stuff a couple days before we came back. But it's our world, at least for the time being. So
yeah, it feels like it's opening up a little bit slowly now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm seeing that. How about you, Dan? What's Boston like right now?
It's still semi-lockdown-ish, but my wife's getting vaccinated today, and I'm getting vaccinated Wednesday. So I'm loosening up my own personal world.
Well, there you go. Well, Cameron, this is open forum here because for those that don't know, and I'm going to record the intro after we do this here. So there's a lot I'm going to say in the intro about, the books that you've written and, how many companies you've grown and scaled and built and all this other stuff. What's something about you that probably wouldn't end up in the bio in the intro? I'm just curious.
Yeah. Well, one is that I'm massively insecure when it comes to small networking events. Like if I went to a cocktail party at your home for 20 people, I would probably drive around the block 3 times and I'd probably be the last person to walk in the door because I'd be nervous. But if you said, hey, can you come and speak at my event and we'll have, 400 people at it, I'd be like, awesome, I'll hop on stage right now, I'll crush it, let's do this. So it's the exact opposite of what people think. People think, oh, you must be super confident because you do stages. Yeah, no, that part's harder.
I've actually heard that from a lot of musicians and stuff, that it's easier to play a big stadium than it is to play a small intimate club because it's just that. It's more intimate. You feel, and I don't mean this necessarily in a bad way, but you feel probably more criticism because you can hear stuff. You can, but I can relate to that. I think I'm more at home. I'm super extroverted, but I'm more at home on a big stage than I am in a little event.
Well, I love energy and I feed off people and I vibe off of rooms and groups and masterminds. But like, let's say I was in an airport restaurant, waiting for a flight and I was going to go grab a bite to eat, I would never, ever sit at the bar to grab a drink and eat. I would absolutely want the corner table. Now, I wouldn't sit facing the corner. I would sit facing out so I could look at the room, but I certainly wouldn't sit at the bar because then I'd have to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
That's interesting fact.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, man. So one of the things we were talking about before we hit record was there's all the knowledge or, everything in the world about you have to have systems and processes and stuff. And I'll just speak for myself and our community of what I've heard of our contracting community here in the fight. A lot of guys seem to get really hung up on, they know the why and they know the what, they don't know the how, and especially when it's that newer, younger company that is like a one-man operation, right? And he's still wearing all those hats. And we have those in here, and we have guys who are doing a couple hundred million a year in here in the fight and part of this audience. We're really all over the board here, but the majority are going to be that company that's like, yeah, I know I have to have processes and systems, but A, I'm not wired for it naturally. It just doesn't come natural. Like, Dan, Neil on our team. Neil is, he wakes up in the morning, Cameron, and he sees the world in flowcharts. it just makes, everything's connected in a process where mine's like a bowl of spaghetti. And so What do you tell that contractor right now that's struggling, just getting off the ground with the how do I scale my business part? The how.
And first part, the reason I even mentioned the whole like insecurity part is I think every single one of us, everyone listening, and the three of us, we're all 16-year-olds trapped in adult bodies. You know, each of us have our own 16-year-old stuff that we're still dealing with, and to realize that none of us have this figured out. So everybody who's listening has just as good a shot as anybody else. So when I was 16, my dad sat me down and he said, "You'll never be smart enough to figure this out on your own." He said, "Your R&D should stand for rip off and duplicate." And he said, "The best companies on the planet are already doing it the best way. Just do what they're doing." Yeah. So if I was a small contractor starting out, if I was to roll the camera back to when I was first as a contractor, I was 21 years old and I started a house painting business. Mm-hmm. I modeled the best in the industry and I just did what they were doing. And I ended up, I had 12 employees when I was 21 years old. Another thing that I did was I was terrified that I wasn't going to make money. So I charged more. And I was charging more than the pros, like the old, I used to call them the old Polish guys, like the, yeah, you know, the real, yeah, professional house painters that did beautiful work that had been doing it for 30 years. I was 20% more expensive than they were because I was so nervous I was going to lose money. And because I was charging more, I could afford to have better marketing and then I worked harder to land it. And when I did, I made money and then I could pay my guys more. So I paid my employees. Like I wasn't paying minimum wage. I was paying, if I think back to like 1986, you know, 35 years ago, I was paying $15 an hour 35 years ago. Mm. You know, I think minimum wage was probably $7 back then.
Right. Sounds about right.
You know, so if minimum wage today is 13, 14, you know, they should be paying $25, $28 at the very, you know, so pay more, charge more. And then when I think of systems, you're right. I'm very systemed. Like your guy who thinks in flowcharts, I kind of reverse engineer everything. Mm-hmm. So I usually start with a goal of where I'm going and I reverse engineer it or I work it backwards. But for me, every system can be written down on a post-it note. You know, the little square yellow post-it notes? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all you need to write down a system for hiring or for recruiting or for marketing or for your day. That little post-it note can be your time manager. It can be your, like, all you need, because it forces you to think clearly when you just have a small piece of paper. And then if I'm thinking of how do I find more clients, I'll write down all the ideas on a post-it note and then I'll put them in order, highest to lowest impact, and then I'll just start doing them. I think where we are today in business is we have the ability to be very distracted by experts who are telling us to do stuff, by social media, where we're seeing all these better ways to do things, by the, you know, a book and another book and another book and another book that adds more to our list. And the reality is it's about doing the critical few things versus the important many. And I think for anybody who's a contractor running a small business and wanting to grow something, it's about focusing on the critical few things. I'd be starting in those areas.
I love that. What I love about what you said is I was afraid I was not going to make money, so I charged more. I mean, Dan, I know I saw you light up a little when he said it, because Cameron, we're in our world, we tell contractors the starting point for you and what I believe is the fastest way out of the financial gutter if you're struggling with money as a contractor is sell and produce your work at least a 50% gross profit. We have changed more lives doing just that one thing, Dan. I mean, we get messages like, "Damn, I thought you were full of shit. I didn't think I'd ever be able to get this in my market, in my industry, in my this and that, but I did it. I trusted you." And the byproduct is I paid off 150 grand worth of debt this year and I saved my marriage. Like, yeah, it's real life stuff just by charging more.
Well, when I walked into, so I don't know if the listener knows this yet, and we'll tell them the bio later, but I was the second in command for 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
Right.
And I walked into 1-800-GOT-JUNK as the 14th employee as their COO. When I left 6.5 years later, we had 3,100 employees system-wide. So I took from 14 people to 3,100. The first thing I did in the first week, I sat down with the CEO, Brian, and I said, "There's three things we have to do. Number one, we have to raise our prices by 40% because we're not making money. Our franchisees aren't making money. We can't afford to pay the guys in the trucks enough money. Our call center people aren't making money. This is a terrible model. We need to charge way more. And he goes, we'll go out of business if we charge more. And I said, we'll go out of business if we don't charge more. So he said, okay. So we raised our prices 40%. And all of a sudden, our competitors started to raise their prices too. We're like, awesome. We're all going to win. Second thing is, I said, we had to be a little more than a business, a little less than a religion. We had to build our business into a cult. And we had to get rid of the grumpy, negative employees and hire the really strong culture people. We had to hire fun people. We had to pay them more. We had to like whip them up into a frenzy. And then the third thing was, we had to get lots of press coverage about our brand, because the more press we got about 1-800-GOT-JUNK talking about how good our culture was and how good our services was, the more our customers would buy from us, which would drive, et cetera, right? So those were the three flywheels. Mm. And I learned the whole profit thing when I was with College Pro Painters. College Pro went on to be the largest house painting company in the world. Back when in 1993, I hired Kimball Musk, who's Elon's brother, hired Kimball to work for me as a franchisee. I also hired his cousin, Peter Reeve, who built Solar City. And I sat down with Kimball on day one and I said, how much profit do you want to earn this year? And he gave me his profit number. And I think it was like he wanted to make $15,000 at that summer as a franchisee. And I said, what if you made 20? He's like, whoa, that would be 20 grand in 93 would be a lot of money for a university kid. Yeah. I said, then let's put a plan in place that you make 20 grand. I said, do you know how much revenue you need to do? No idea. So we started with his profit goal, figured out how much revenue he'd need to do to end up at the profit. Then we figured out where the revenue would come from, how many customers he would need, how many estimates, you know, we worked it backwards. So I think for anybody listening, again, think about those numbers. How much money do you want to make running your business this year? And then what do you have to do to get that? And then what are the things you can do to execute to get that?
Yeah, it's a lot like losing weight, right? I want to weigh 190. I now weigh 205. Right. You know, what do I need? What are the metrics, right?
And are you going to measure yourself every single day?
Yeah. So on that, okay, on that, measure yourself every day. Dan, you know this. I'm fanatical about the KPIs and I give people shit all the time if they don't know what they've sold, you know, month to date and all this other stuff.
Daily.
Yeah, I'm pretty obsessive about it. We have a sales academy, Cameron, for contractors, and every day I'm like, what'd you sell today? New contracts, what it is, and what it is, listen to me, what is it? and it's to the point where it really annoys a lot of people, but I'm like, what you focus on improves, right? Like where your attention goes, energy flows or whatever all those cliche yep. things are. But talk to me about, for a contractor, since I know you've been there, what KPIs would you personally be tracking right out of the gate religiously?
It depends on what my goals are that I'm trying to track. So the first most important goal that a contractor needs to have is their profit, their gross margin per job, right? So how much profit per job? And so just in case they're not sure what that simple number means, you have revenue, right? The amount of money that customers are paying you. And then you have your cost of goods sold, right? Which is your labor and your materials cost. Right. So let's say that you're building a deck. I've got the cost of my wood and nails and glue and paint and my three guys that are going to help me build the deck. That's my cost of goods sold. And the customer is going to pay me $1,000 and I got $400 worth of material and labor or $600. I'm going to have $400 left in gross margin. And then I have my overhead, like my accountant or my bookkeeper and some marketing and my gas and my insurance. And your gross margin has to pay for your overhead. So you need to understand how much gross margin you need to create every job. And I thought of gross margin on an hourly basis. For every hour I've got a guy working at College Pro Painters, I need to make $3.52 in gross margin per labor hour. That was 1986. I still remember that number. So I was obsessed on an hourly basis. Am I at least making that gross margin? Because I knew over the course of the year with 12 people working, you know, that means I'm making $40 in gross margin over the course of a day. I'm making $320 in gross margin over the course of the day. The numbers yep. all flowed out, right?
Yep.
So gross margin per labor hour. And then secondly, how happy are my employees? And third, how happy are my customers? Your happiness of your employees is more important than your customers. Yeah. Because if your employees are happy, they're going to pick up after themselves. They're going to be polite to the customers. They're going to do good work. They're going to work harder. They'll drop the flowers or the flyers around the neighborhood. But if you're so obsessed about taking care of the customer, your employees feel like they're second rate. So I obsess about the gross margin, employee happiness, and customer happiness would be the top three.
You know, I love that because our natural tendency, I think, is to go to, hey, I want to scale my business. I want to grow my business. I got to, you know, be fanatical about leads and sales and, you know, job costing and all this other stuff. And two of your top three things were people.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and it all comes easily after that, right? If you obsess about those right things, and that's kind of what I mean by the focus on the critical few things versus the important many. Hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Because if you really focus on those critical few things, then everything else takes care of itself.
Are these the three metrics that you just shared, you know, or KPIs? Are these three things that are kind of universal to Cameron, that wherever you go, these kind of are your three? I know you talked about it depends on the outcome that you're after, but I'm not just curious.
Not the gross margin necessarily per labor hour. I'm really thinking specifically for the contractors. Mm-hmm. Because again, I've been one and I've coached them. It's funny. I just had a friend of mine who I've known for 33 years send me an email yesterday. He's from Ottawa. He's got a contracting business. He's got 6 trucks and 10 guys. And I'm just like, fucking hey, man, you're doing it. I'm so excited for him. So I'm thinking about this guy, you know, Henry Patterson in Ottawa, who runs his little contracting business. I'll send him this episode when it comes out, but I'm thinking about what advice I would be giving Henry.
Yeah.
So if I was coaching any other company, I would say employee satisfaction first, right? Employee net promoter, customer net promoter score third. And then I would be working off the strategic. But with the contractors, yeah, I think gross margin per labor hour, because without that, it doesn't matter how happy anybody is. If you're not making money, it all just sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, business isn't happy, the employees aren't.
Right. And then with all other businesses, though, I think most business people in the early stages, the ones who succeed are the ones that have figured out the economics of their business. You know, but I only coach companies that have already figured that out. So when I'm in the coaching world, I'm working with companies 50 to 500 employees. They already understand the gross margin for the most part of their business.
Right.
So Cameron, can you circle back to the whole R&D rip and develop mindset that you have? You know, Tom was a coach of mine years ago. And at one point he's like, you know what, Dan, you've done everything the hard way. Cause I tried to attract fresh snow everywhere I went. And it's, and that's what we deal with a lot of these guys. They're artists first before they become businessmen and they think they're the best tradespeople. What words can you give them just to like step back away from the ego and just follow who's already succeeding?
Yeah. So it's rip off and duplicate. Cause what I want them to do is take what somebody else is doing and just do that. So as an example, if I was a contractor running, you know, whatever kind of business, right? Building decks, building homes, doing renovations, doing plumbing, electrical, whatever, I would go and look at shack shine. I would look at Wow One Day Painting. I would look at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. I would look at those three brands' websites and I would look at how their vehicles are wrapped and I would wrap mine the same. I would look at their marketing ideas. I would market mine similar. You know, I wouldn't try to figure it out because the reality is these guys have already figured it out. So here's something else to remember. The school system fucked us up. Because for 18 years or for 12 years, we all went to school and we were told that we weren't the smartest person in the room. We weren't the A+ student. We weren't getting 95% on every test. So every single day we were told we were stupid or average or not good enough. Yeah. And then we couldn't pay attention and we were scattered. So we didn't do well. So we ended up having to run our own business. And the reality is we're making more money than most of our teachers were anyway. So it's right. Kind of a weird model, right? But what we were told that we had to be the smartest person in the classroom, and we still believe that the most successful people are the smartest. Now, with the access to the internet, you don't have to be the one who knows it all. You just have to go find it. So instead of me thinking, what should my marketing look like? I don't fucking know. I'll just go, like, 1-800-GOT-JUNK has got 15 people in their marketing department. I'll just rip off their flyers. I'll look at their marketing. I'll look at their brand.
Yep. It's something that people need to learn and get step past their ego. We had one of our mastermind groups that Tom ran. The great thing about it was an ecosystem of ideas, and everyone, contractors all have similar problems. And so just be able to find how somebody else solved it and apply it to yourself is the easiest way to success.
Well, and I do it all the time, right? I just go out and look for, you know, it's one of my frustrations with a lot of business people reading books is you don't need to read a new book every week. You need to take the ideas from the book you just read and put them in place. And after they're all working, then read another book about something you're working on. So as an example, I just launched a course. So I launched a course called Invest in Your Leaders. It's all of the systems that all managers and leaders need to get better at. So I'm thinking about and reading about launching a course. You know, I'm listening to podcasts about guys who have launched courses. I'm reading through their websites. I'm talking to people about launching courses because I can't learn it all on my own, but I can figure out what they're doing and just do most of what they're doing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it perfect? I don't know, but it's faster than me trying to figure it out. I'm not going to go get an MBA and being a course launcher.
Right.
You know, it's funny you bring up the reading the books and stuff. I, over the past several months, have kind of gone on a content hiatus because I'm just like, I just need to apply the things I already know to do.
Well, and here's one of the reasons why we need a content hiatus at times is the more content that we devour, whether we listen to it or we read it or we, you know, we watch it, is often those ideas are random. So I would rather learn about something I'm working on right now. If I'm going to hire somebody, let me learn about doing interviews, right? If I'm doing marketing, let me learn about marketing. If I want to make more money, let me learn about making more money. But to read just another business book that someone recommended causes more stress because I now feel like I'm not doing enough. And it adds more to my to-do list, which wasn't necessarily the stuff that I should be working on. And it takes up the time that I could have been doing stuff with my family or my friends or actually focusing on the stuff I needed to get done.
Yeah. Yeah. I what's that? They say, you can consume or you can create. And, you know, it's typically the creators that are kicking ass. So, and I'm not saying don't ever consume content, but just in this thing where, you know, I was traveling a lot. And so I'd pop in a podcast or I'd bring a book and, which are all good. But the other thing I've done recently, sounds like you were kind of talking about there, is if I am consuming content now, it's only around the stuff that's going to lead me towards the closer to the goals that I have right now.
Or it may, the other time I'll read it is if it really inspires me. Like I'm listening to a podcast right now called My First Million, which I don't recommend that our listeners necessarily listen to because it's more on the tech side and investing side. But man, I get off those podcast episodes and I'm just like, fuck, I'm fired up. Like I'm just, you know, it's like, it's so I'll listen to content for those purposes.
Yeah. Earlier you mentioned when you went to Brian at 1-800-GOT-JUNK with three things that needed to happen. And the third thing you talked about press coverage.
Yeah.
And was that, does that just apply to a company like yours that had the vision of, you know, scaling and franchising the bejesus out of it and stuff like that, and not so much the local guy? How does that all play in?
Yeah, no, I'll speak to the local guy. So let's say that you're running a small, you know, remodeling business and you're in Boston and you've got four employees. That person, everyone listening actually, has four stories the media will write about. The first story is the genesis story. It's how you started your business, right? You either struggled in school and you had to go get a job, or you were working construction on your in school and you decided to go off on your own because you hated your boss, or you needed to make more money, you did a side gig for somebody and you were good with your hands and it turned into a business. It's that genesis. It's how you started. It inspires, it educates, and the media loves those stories. Now, you're not going to get covered in Forbes magazine, but you don't need Forbes magazine. You need local business press, right? And the local business press can't afford to go out and find more articles. So they'll take the good ones that you put in their hands. So if they inspire and educate, that's one. The second story is what I call the lessons from the edge, right? Or the hero's journey. It's how you struggled and failed. It's how you almost went bankrupt. It's how you almost lost your marriage or did. It's how you, you know, you almost lost everything. It's how you burned down I burned down a guy's sauna on his property because my guys were out water skiing and it fucking burned this guy's sauna. You know, or how we spilled paint on the carpeting and we had to throw the woman's cat into the paint to make it look like her cat spilled the paint.
That's
and
right. Those damn cat.
Those lessons from the edge story are good because they show people that we all struggle, we all fail, and we'll all figure it out, right? It's the classic Planet of the Apes, right? We crash and burn, we struggle, and we emerge story. So we all have that. The third story that we all have is a story about our culture, right? It's like, how do you build a good construction company? How do you build like the roofing company where all your employees are happy? You know, because I've met some roofing companies where the employees are the grumpiest, most negative people on the planet. And then I meet some other ones. I'm like, you guys are good guys. Like, how come you're all so happy? Like, what's the difference, right? And that, again, it inspires and educates. And they're typically called fluff pieces, but the media needs those filler stories. And you don't care if your story gets told on a Tuesday or Saturday. So what does it matter? Just get it filled. And then the fourth story that we all have is a story about how our product or our service helped a customer. It's how the deck that we built gave them their family parties, or how the home that we renovated gave them, you know, a better place to have Christmas parties or whatever. And the media loves the story because it's about our customer benefiting from something that we did. Now, every story that you get is kind of like a log. So let's say that Tom, you got three stories about your business. Now you've got three logs. They're just sitting there. They don't do anything. Three logs just sitting there. You got to light them on fire, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to take your stories and you have to put them on your media page of your website. You have to share the link from your website on Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter. You have to email the links to your stories to all of your customers and your suppliers. Get your employees to share it on their social media profiles. And depending on the size of your business, maybe you have AdRoll set up for remarketing. So anybody who comes to your website gets pixeled, and then all of those ads they're now seeing about your business. So social media is how you light the logs on fire. But when I was a kid, when I was 13 years old, we'd get these logs and we'd light them on fire. And then I was probably like you, we like to pour gas on the fire too, right? Mm-hmm. So the way you pour gas on the fire, again, as you get bigger as a contractor, now you're going to buy advertising traffic. You're going to drive more people to see those links on your website, which amplifies the message, and they all get retargeted even more. So one of the reasons why I love doing marketing is, you know, example for me with your podcast, this won't make or break my business, mm-hmm. but I'll take your podcast link. It'll be shared 3 times this year on Facebook, 3 times on LinkedIn, 3 times on Twitter. It'll be on my Cameron Herald press page. It'll be emailed out to people, you know, so I can amplify this as another log on my fire.
Yeah. I think so many contractors fail to embrace the true marketing thing. And, you know, Dan, we've said to people all the time, like this is just my own take here. When I become a business owner, I no longer get to wear the hat of painter or whatever I am. Right. Like that goes to like eighth on the list now, you know, I need to market, I need to sell, I need to lead. Otherwise I don't have a business. I have nothing to paint. And Cameron, I bring that up with, they don't embrace the marketing thing because
Dan. Well, marketing's confusing and it's expensive.
Yeah. So
let me give you a system. By the way, do our listeners watch this or just listen to this?
Both. It'll be on YouTube and our podcast.
So. Okay. I'm going to show you something really quickly just because I think it'll make a really good example for anybody who's watching. And then maybe you can put a link to something as an image and that they can look at. But imagine if every single contract, can you just put on screen sharing for me?
There, I just made you the host.
Okay, so take a look at these images that I'm sharing now. This is Shackshine. This is just a truck for a power washing company. Like every contractor could have a, you know how much it costs to wrap a vehicle like this? $2,500.
Right.
But that vehicle driving around the city doesn't even need to be a new vehicle. It can be a 15-year-old van, right? Or here's another one. Wow, One Day Painting is another one.
Yep.
But again, look at this vehicle. Interesting how, why they look so similar, because it's the same parent company.
Right.
Right. But right. if you're just a guy, if you're Fred driving up in a Ford Econoline van and you got like a fridge magnet on the side door.
I totally had that when I started. I literally had a Ford Econoline van.
I ripped the seats out.
I bought it for $1,100 off my uncle and he threw in a 24-foot ladder.
And there you go.
There you go.
I had a 1979 Ford Econoline van and I got two magnets for the doors. And then, but this, you know what I did the second year? I went to this guy and I paid him $700 and he painted it yellow. It did a shitty job, but it was yellow, man. And then I put big decals on the side that said College Pro Painters and everybody saw me.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you imitated a school bus, right? They're yellow for a reason, so you spot them.
I was lucky that I was part of a franchise program and I listened to the franchisor. I figured that if the franchisor had a good system, they would be telling us. And if there was a better way, they would know before I would. So I just did everything they told me.
I love it.
It's interesting, Cameron, those four things you listed for the press. Like, I think most contractors have that on their website. Like on my website, I've got all four of those items. I've got a big fail. Mm-hmm. I've got my biggest warranty job ever. I've got how I got into the business, why I like it. And we promote it with Facebook and otherwise, but I think a lot of contractors don't think people are interested in that story. And so they're not going to promote it through the Chamber of Commerce or the local news, but I don't know. How would you change that perspective?
I would go and grab the daily and weekly newspapers in your city every day for the next month and flip through the lifestyle section and the business section and look at some of the stories that are getting covered and realize that press is there. The smaller the market, the bigger the opportunity as well for contractors. You know, if you're in like, the Worcester, Massachusetts Weekly, awesome. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Because nobody else is, and Worcester's big enough, and that you're not trying to sell to all of Massachusetts, right?
Yeah.
So you don't need to be in the Boston Globe, right? I don't need to be in the Dallas Morning News. I need to be in the Texas Weekly Christian, newspaper. Awesome, because that press I can then give to my customers, and your customers don't care how big or small it is. But they'll read it, or they might not even read it. They'll just be like, oh, you're more important than Fred who just came because you've been covered in the press and Fred's got a fridge magnet on his door.
Yeah. I think people just underestimate just how others want to communicate on a human level and just relate to people as people. You know, it's like you listen to NPR StoryCorps. It's like random little, experiences other strangers have, but everyone can relate to them because we're all humans.
And here's something else that we've all heard as humans and that a lot of us forget when we're in business, and it's first impressions, right? We've all heard that first impressions matter, right? Or dress for success, or, the girls will judge you by the shoes you wear. Or we've all heard these little stories about dress. But if you're a contractor who shows up and you're not wearing a clean pair of chinos and a branded golf shirt, driving up in a vehicle that's wrapped, you're going to get your ass handed to you by somebody who is. Mm-hmm. So if you're showing up in dirty jeans and a t-shirt or clothing that doesn't have your brand on it, or just a vehicle, I don't have any sympathy for you because it isn't that expensive. You know,
100%.
For a total of $4,000, you can wrap your vehicle. You can get a couple of branded shirts made, like go and buy a couple of Ralph Lauren polo shirts and take them to an embroiderer and pay $100 to have your logo put on it because you're only getting two done, and have a nice big logo, and then get a baseball cap that has your company logo on it. You know, maybe you're gonna have to pay $100 to get one baseball cap made because you don't get them but show up like that, you win.
Yeah.
If you show up wearing like a you know, the t-shirt Tom's wearing or a Lululemon thing, like, you're not going to win. You just don't win. Because, like, I remember the old Polish guy showing up to give me a house estimate. I ended up hiring him just because I didn't want to hire a bunch of university students to paint my house. I actually wanted to pay the pro to do it. But he was like wearing old painter's whites and they were paint all over them. And he had an old t-shirt on and he smelled like smoke. I'm like, fuck, those guys have a tougher time than the branded,
right?
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think having the screws clocked on the switch covers perfectly is going to get them the job. You know, it's like no one cares.
Well, it's I hear all the time is, well, my work should speak for itself, so I don't need to market my business. And I'm like, dude, there's a lot of starving artists in the world, man, where the work is beautiful. And there's a lot of guys that aren't very good at their trade or that are average, right? That are just average. They're not the Michelangelo of their industry and they're crushing it financially because they got the marketing thing figured out.
Yeah.
So I have a number of Facebook groups and I posted the other day that I was going to be talking to you today and got a number of questions, but one that I want to ask you here, because one of the guys, his name's Nathan. He's like, this question's for Cameron. And he's referring to 1-800-GOT-JUNK and that whole rise. How to not get burned out with the fast pace and growth? How did he manage to keep control of the business? And what were the key systems that kept him and the company in check through it all?
Okay, so first one was, how do we not get burned out with the fast growth?
Yeah.
We said no more often than we said yes. We absolutely maniacally focused on the critical few things. We really did stay very active. Like, I played on two ultimate frisbee teams and I was running half marathons and 10K races. One summer I ran six 10K races. So we stayed very active and physically, mm-hmm. and we made it fun. We hired fun people. You know, like I was talking to Brian, the CEO, about this the other day. I mean, I left the company 15 years ago and
right.
I started there 21, 22 years ago. We were laughing about, like, it was fucking fun, but it was because we hired really good, fun people to work with. I didn't hire people that wanted to build a garbage company. I hired, you know, fun people. So that was, what was the second question?
Well, real quick, the first thing you said to that first part of the question was you said no more. What's an example of that, of things you would say no to?
Well, there were opportunities to open a second brand, or there were opportunities to try certain marketing things, or to open up in other cities, or to build a better technology platform. And we tried to do the easy things that would create momentum. I think, so, you know, the satellites that are flying around the Earth right now, mm-hmm. guess how fast the satellites are traveling?
I actually have no idea. My gut says, say really fast or really slow, and I'll probably be right.
Yeah. They're traveling at 25 times the speed of sound.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It's like holy shit. Right. It's like something like 23,000 miles an hour. Now, what's interesting is the satellites have no energy propelling them right now. Once they're in orbit, they just go in orbit. So it takes a lot of effort to get it there, and then it just works. So what we did at 1-800-GOT-JUNK was we did things that might have taken a lot of work to get up, like PR, but then all that press just kept working forever. Mm, you know, It took a lot of work to get on Oprah, but we've talked about it for 18 years now.
Right.
Right. Right. So we found a lot of those things to say yes to, and we said no to the stuff that was high effort, high, I called it PETA, the high pain in the ass factor. Anything that was a high PETA, we said no to. And anything that was easy, we said yes to.
Love that. Second part of the question, how did he manage to keep control of the business? And what were the key systems that kept the company in check through it all?
Well, we were very, very focused on a few critical numbers, right? Our franchisee net promoter score. We really wanted happy franchisees. I also wanted very profitable franchisees, because if our franchisees were profitable and happy, they wouldn't take up our management time. They would validate well for other franchises, which means we would grow. They would show up at conferences and they would learn. So we just focused on those two things, and that just went really, really well.
Love it. Okay. what have we not?
And it wasn't like I make it sound easy. I mean, it wasn't easy, right? It was hard. Like it took a long time to get to the night before we became that overnight success story. Like we worked very, 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 very hard.
What's one of your, I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of times we can look at somebody who's had this massive success over and over like you have and think that you just kind of walk in the room and, you know, the gods of blessing all bow down to you because you're going to grow and scale another business, right? That it's, you know what I'm saying, Dan? Like, I think a lot of times people look at the success and they go, it's easy, or that you didn't have some of the same struggles that everybody else has. So I'm curious, what, when you look back over all the businesses you've grown, scaled, this and that, what's a memorable time that you just got punched in the face and it just about leveled your ass?
I'll give you a big one. We almost bankrupted the company and we were $100 million in revenue. So when you're small, you have to run a business in a certain way and you can make decisions very quickly. Oh, I'll invest in this. Like I got money in my pocket. I'll put it into that. Oh, I'm a little tight on cash. I'll max out my credit card this month. No big deal. When you're bigger, maxing out your credit card doesn't work. You got to get a bank loan or a credit line, or maybe you can't draw. So it's a little tougher. And then as we were getting bigger, we were still running the company like we were this small entrepreneurial business. So at one point we had $5 million cash in the bank. We spent $2 million renovating our office because we were doing a 60,000 square foot build out, including an 800,000 square foot stairway and huge, huge build out. $600,000 moving the company, $800,000 in bonuses, $600,000 in taxes. We burned through the $5 million in cash in about 4 months. And we needed money to cash flow. So we said to our CFO, go get a bank credit line. And, you know, we're off and running. We 6 consecutive years of 100% revenue growth, number 2 company in Canada to work for, profitable every month, hitting our goals, 59 of 60 months, like just crushing it. And the bank said they wouldn't loan to us. We're like, what do you mean? Look at all these data points.
Right.
They're like, well, clearly you guys don't know how to run a business. And we're like, yeah, we do. They're like, no, like if you'd come to us 3 months ago with $5 million in cash, we would have loaned you $5 million. We're like, well, we didn't need $5 million. Anyway, we had to go and borrow $420,000 from Brian's mom just to meet payroll.
Wow.
Wow.
And we were 106 million run rate and we almost lost the business. So what I learned from that was, if you're going to have smart people working for you, listen to them. We had a very quiet, amiable, analytical head of finance who kept telling us to be careful, kept telling us to slow down, kept asking us if we thought we were growing too quickly. But we were like, no, no, we got this, because we were such high disc, high D, right? Mm-hmm. We just drove right over top of them. But the big lesson was either hire people you will listen to or listen to the people you hired.
That's a great tit right there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Why reinvent it? You hired them for a reason. Right. So, what have we not touched on today that would make sense before we get out of here?
One of the big ones is that this is just what we do to make money. You know, I don't think for anybody, small, medium, or large, that business should be your everything. You know, business can be fun. You can have a good time at it, but you got to stop and smell the flowers, right? You got to go and play golf and have some hobbies and hang out with your kids and hang out with your spouse. And people are like, well, I don't have any hobbies. Well, fuck, get some, right? You know, I'm working too hard. Well, then you're the boss. Like you're reporting to you, you know, like I don't understand. If your boss is such a shitty boss, then you should quit. But I think we have to build some fun back into our lives and build some hobbies back in, because at the end of the day, we're all going to die. Mm-hmm. You know, this is just what we do to make money.
Dan, that kind of sounds like you, the whole fun Me? Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's, we talk about culture, and if we want to have happy employees and have that slow down scream, it has to start with us. And a lot of people, myself included, I built a paint business that I looked around one day and I was like, this is not the business I wanted. It's not, takes up all my summertime, all my free time. And so I had to completely blow it up and rebuild it, because like you said, it's like, I'm here to live my life and paint's a vehicle to get there. not the other way around.
Well, and Dan's been a big mountain biker and stuff. And how long did you, I mean, that was his big hobby. One of his big hobbies, that and shooting and stuff. And I'm like, how long did you go without riding your damn bike?
And then I reached a point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got a point where my epiphany was, you know, my riding crew went from like 20 guys down to two of us after families and physical attrition. And my buddy's like, why are you never showing up to ride anymore? And it's because I was just running around doing business stuff instead of focusing on Dan, and the whole world was miserable around me. So it was quite an epiphany where you just have to, like, you know what, it's like, start with you. And one thing, Cameron, that strikes me, everything you say from the start of this conversation, you've got an abundance mindset. Like, everything is possible in your mind. And when Tom said we focus on the space between the years first and foremost, it's like, I think listeners need to realize that everything starts with your own personal, you know, mental outlook, because
very much, you know, it's interesting. So if I was to have known you back when you were running your painting business, you probably didn't have to close down either. We probably could have, or you probably could have built time into every day and every week to have for you, and you would have delegated more. You would have said no to more. You might have raised prices more. You might have trained your guys more. Because when I was running my house painting business, you know, I'll give you an example. I was 21 years old. I had 12 employees. And in 4 months, May 1st till August 31st, I painted 148 houses. So, but I didn't fucking paint. I hated painting. But I also played about 35 games of golf, played about 20 games of tennis, and hung out at the dock at my parents' home. But every day from 1 o'clock until 4 o'clock, I took 3 hours off. Now, I woke up early and I worked hard until one, but I took 3 hours off every day. And then I took off every Sunday morning, and I figured out how to chunk my time in my calendar and delegate everything except genius. Yeah. I could have even worked less, right? Had I maybe hired somebody to do some marketing so I didn't have to do as much, or I could have had one of my foremen do the paint production runs for me so I didn't have to go to the paint store at 7 a.m. Like, I could have probably worked less and worked smarter. But many of us as entrepreneurs, and almost everybody listening, I think a lot of us are like flies. You know how we've seen the fly trying to get out the window, mm-hmm. and it's going to keep banging his head. I wish I had a fly on the windowsill to show you, but they end up dead on the windowsill because mm-hmm. they're going to work hard, work hard, work hard. But there's a shortcut. There's like a door. Just turn, go out the door, right? Yeah. Right here. There's a door right beside you. And I think if we were to work smarter and not harder.
Yep. Right? And to be clear, I still have my painting company, and I did do that.
Good.
I redirected, and, you know, it's and
that's even better.
Yeah. So it's
because, you know, we start businesses for only three reasons: to give us money, to give us time so that we can control our time, or to say that we did it, right? To put our flag in the ground, to say, look, Ma, I did it, you know, tell our teacher, yep. Fuck, you know, we did it. So we have to rig the rules in our favor so that we can actually have the time and have the money. So you actually probably have done it. You've got your business still running and you don't have to run it every day. That's winning, man.
Yeah. No, I've got myself down to 30 hours a week. I don't go to the store. My guys do pretty much everything. And now my wife and I are putting together our vivid vision to make it so we don't even have to show up ever.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner, right?
Yeah, that's the plan.
There you go. So, all right. You are, as I mentioned in the intro, you're the author of several books. If somebody were to pick up one of your books and they've never read one, which one would you, contractor, right? We got a contractor.
Yeah. I'm actually going to give them two. I would read The Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs that I co-authored with Hal Elrod. I think that'll have a big impact on everybody's life and their business. And then I would read Double Double, mm-hmm. but in Double Double, I would read chapters 1, 2, 4, 6, and 12 to start with. It's not a novel. You don't have to read it front to back, right? You can pick your way around. So those would be the two that I would start with for any contractors.
I love it. All right. Well, Cameron, listen, before we get out of here, my buddy Travis, who his company, they've been producing my podcast for years, done, I don't know, I think we're on 400 episodes now or something. He's got a really cool app where It's called Poddex, and it's random questions. So I'm just going to like spin the wheel here and ask you a question. So I don't know what's going to happen. All right. Oops, where is it? Shoot, it just went away. It's not the app. It's me, by the way.
Boxers or briefs? Neither.
Yeah. All right. What is something that everyone looks stupid doing?
drying off their naked body when they get out of the shower. No wonder we all wear clothes, man. There's just not that many good looking bodies out there.
Well, dude, I was in a hotel just the other day, and you know, you open the shower curtain and the mirror is like right there. And I opened the mirror and I was like, who's the fat guy in the bathroom with me? Right. Like it was just and I'm like, oh my God, I hate the light in here. It makes me look even worse. So that's true. We do wear clothes for a reason, man. That's well, good stuff. Cameron, really appreciate you hanging out with us today. And if somebody wants to learn more about you, your stuff, your books, your programs and things like that, where do you want them to go?
Yeah, I mean, for fun, if they ever listen, if they love podcasts, the Second in Command podcast, but I would say all of my books are on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes is the easiest place to start. If they're a bigger contractor, you know, they have some managers working for them, definitely check out the Invest in Your Leaders course. It's just investinyourleaders.com.
All right. We will make sure to get all those show notes or all that in the show notes and all that stuff. And man, once again, I really appreciate you hanging out with us today.
And, that was fun. Great way to start the week.
Absolutely. So, well, I know it's going to add a lot of value to a lot of people, man. There were some really good nuggets in here that are going to help these guys succeed more. And that's the whole purpose of what we're doing. So,
of course, please send me the link to this when it goes live. I want to forward it off to my buddy Henry in Ottawa too.
Sounds like a plan. Cameron, super appreciate you being here. Dan, have a great day. Travis, rock us out with the guitars. We'll see you guys next time on The Fight.